And now, here's your host, Alessandra Torrisani.
I'm so excited. Monica Burke, welcome to Emotional Support.
Thank you.
I'm really excited because when they sent me your information, it said that you were part of the Faith series on Good Morning America. And I love Good Morning America. So that was really exciting for me.
Yes.
I was like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. So you have a podcast. You have multiple books. I want to get right into it. How did you start? Were you born just in a household that was surrounded by faith and by Kabbalah? Was this something that you were born into, that you always found faith? You know, this is something that it's a topic that's not really talked about a lot on my podcast. So I'm so excited to kind of get into it and talk about faith and the importance of it for your mental health.
Yes. I was not born into a home that the way I refer to faith, by the way, is certainty. And I know certainty is a word that can be used many different ways. Certainty, often people think it's feeling secure or, you know, in control. Certainty for me is really belief in something greater than yourself.
Wow.
And trusting the process is the purpose of life. So I didn't grow up in that kind of home, but I did grow up in a house that believed in God, believed in being a good person, believed in certain traditions, right? So there were connections we made, but I never had the answers to life's big questions, like why are we here? What is our purpose? How do we find our potential? Is there life after death? What happens when we die? You know, so all these things that I remember as a very young child kind of positing, believe it or not, I really felt that I had a strong desire to know. And there weren't many around me that had the answers. The other thing is I really also saw a lot of people suffering. And it wasn't at first, but my parents, my father was a self-made man. He was a self-made millionaire. And then I had a very happy childhood. And then when I was around 9, we moved from, you know, where I lived in Louisiana, beautiful like home and life. And I felt very secure to moving to Beverly Hills where my extended family lived. My father lost all his money. And then I saw them go through a period of like great suffering, right? And then they kind of stayed in that mindset. So I saw a lot of people suffering in life. And I thought, well, that can't be why we're here, right? So I kept trying to find the answers. And then when I was 17, I found the wisdom of Kabbalah, which then answered every question I ever had and answered some I hadn't even thought of. So that was really what changed my life. But I think I came into the world, actually, I know I did, with this kind of curiosity and hunger to connect to something bigger than me, because I had felt it already, right? And then I felt it move, and then I wanted to find it again, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. And you're a mom, and you know, I'm a newish mom. I mean, 20 months, so I'm still pretending she's my newborn, but she's not a newborn anymore. Thank you. And I think that, you know, it's a lot of, you know, you never realize how hard I feel like everything is for you, how hard it was for your parents until you parent and you understand like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I said that. I hope that she doesn't understand what that means, or I hope she doesn't hear, you know, what that truly means, or the way that you speak to others, or, you know, just worrying about like a financial crisis of like, how am I going to make money? Like what happens in a doomsday situation? So, and 9, I feel like, is a very significant time in your life to really be aware of what's going on. It's not like you were really young where you didn't know any different. You're becoming, you know, it's funny. I spoke to someone who talked about we actually go through puberty way earlier than we think we do. And it actually starts around 7 and 8 years old, a lot of the time for women. So and they say that that's when, you know, a lot of emotional changes happen between like 9 and 11, which was a really weird time for me too. So it's interesting that for you, that's when you started being aware of things and understanding.
Well, I think you become aware of yourself in a different way at that age, and therefore you're aware of everything around you, right? I think suddenly you're seeing yourself outside of just what you're feeling. You're saying, well, how do I fit into this world?
Sure.
And I think it's a thought that a lot of kids at that age have, but if you're not in the right environment or you don't feel comfortable sharing your feelings or you don't have the people to express it to, it's something that you just internalize. It can be scary.
Was therapy like a modality that was, you know, given to you when you were young? Like where something like nothing?
No.
Did you talk about your feelings with your parents or was it very like kind of shut off?
I was more of the fixer in the family. We're three sisters. I'm the middle child. My nature has always been to kind of help and be of service anyway, even though I didn't realize that was a profession at the time.
Yeah.
and I think that I was just really aware that my parents were struggling and that they were dealing with their own issues. So I didn't feel like mine were as important. Perhaps. And I also didn't feel like anybody could really help, I guess.
Right. So when you were 17, how did you find Kabbalah?
So funnily enough, I found it through my parents. My grandmother had started to study.
Wow.
And then it became like this esoteric, heady wisdom. It was very like it was something they would discuss and they would take classes together. And I wasn't interested at all. I went to Beverly Hills High School at the time. And I'm a curious person. At least I'm curious about positive things now, but I was curious about everything then. And my parents were concerned that I was going down a wrong path. And so my father was going to Israel and it was my spring break. So we did this trip together. He kind of wanted to connect us to some kind of heritage and our roots. And the Kabbalah Center was having an event there. And so he's like, you know, let's go, come with me. So I did, and it was like coming home. Like I just felt it was very serendipitous. I felt like I had been there before. Everything that I heard, I felt like I had known. It was just like a coming home once again. And so then it took about a year for me to start studying, but then it just changed the trajectory of my life. Like everything changed from that moment, really. My understanding of me, my place in the world.
Sure.
My sense of purpose.
I think that's so cool that you were 17 when you discovered that. Like really, truly, it's like it was your college awakening, you know? But I find that when I go to certain places, I was born and raised Catholic, but I talk about it a little bit sometimes, but my grandmother on my mom's side, her father was actually Jewish. And so if we did the 23andMe and I forgot what the percentage is of Ashkenazi Jewish descent, right? And so I was like, so my mom and I really like kind of got into studying and like understanding that side of it and kind of cool. And I just think it's so fun because there have been so many moments and I've been very lucky enough to travel around the world. And I always find myself going to, you know, temples of whatever, or, you know, churches, whatever religion it is, I always find myself drawn to seeing these old, beautiful places. And there have been so many places that I've walked into and I'm like, I feel like, oh, I've been here before. Like, I don't know if it's now that I feel that way, you know what I mean? Or if it's from a past life or what brought me there. But there are so many places of just magical spiritual energies that you just feel so drawn to. So I do understand that feeling of, it's never taken me to a path where I'm like, this is my life now. And this is my job and my career. But I think that that's so magical and so wonderful. So when you discovered this, what made you then go, okay, you know what? Now I want to be a voice and I want to bring this home and I want to share this with other people.
Well, first, I started living it. And I think that's the big difference. I think sometimes people find a spiritual wisdom or a pursuit, and it can either be an intellectual pursuit or they're going through some kind of trauma or challenge and it helps them, or it's a sense of community. For me, it was all of the above. And I really felt like more than anything, because then I went through my own struggles. I developed an eating disorder and it was the thing that really saved me because I understood that you're not any one thing. You're not a disease. You're not a label. I understood that there was a bigger purpose to why I came to this world. And so I really started to become the person that I wanted to become. I started to grow my voice. I started to tap into my passions. I started to remove shame. And the more that I did that, and the more invested I was in my own spiritual growth, the more I wanted to share that with the world. Mm. So I think that perhaps if I didn't feel it so strongly, and then I didn't really live it, right, and take it that seriously, then I don't know if I would have had the bigger desire then to share it with the world as I do. Mm.
I thank you for sharing also. I think it's a very personal thing, and people talking about, you know, eating disorders and that's something that more people deal with on a daily basis than you would even know. So I thank you so much for sharing that. Have you been able to talk to other people about that and been able to help others through the wisdom that you've learned?
Absolutely. That's why I speak very openly about it. I struggled with it for 5.5 years. And I'm one of the lucky ones that got healthy. It's not a guarantee.
It's
very prevalent. I really understood that me getting healthy, right? I think the tools really help that. Because again, if you believe in something bigger than yourself, then when things happen in life, especially the difficult things, you don't think it's the end of the world, or you don't think it's a punishment, or you don't think that you deserve this bad thing. Instead, you see it as the thing that's going to help you become a better version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so it really made me look at the challenges in my life, and not just that one, or the obstacles, as an opportunity for growth. It's because I'm meant to do something more. I'm meant to be something more. Mm-hmm. And so I share that message with people, because I think far too often we take anything negative that's happened to us and we get stuck in that moment instead of seeing it as an opportunity for growth.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that mindset. What do you say to people though? I mean, And I'm someone that's a big believer in faith, so, and spirituality. So I'm not this person, but I find myself constantly defending myself and my beliefs to people. And I'm not trying to change anyone to be like me, but those who don't believe and don't have faith or don't believe in God, you know, what do you say to someone like that who maybe approaches you and is like, well, this is all, you know, this is all bullshit, you know? How would you say, well, you can believe the way that what you believe? What is kind of the conversation behind that? It's a tough one, but I just,
you know, I don't know if it's, I don't push any one thing. I'm not saying you even have to call it God. I just think that if you're really being honest with yourself, I mean, there's energy, right? You can call it energy, you can call it light. There's sometimes where we feel elated, or we feel altruistic, or there's a better part of ourselves, right? That's light for me. And so I think people can even frame God as nature, right? It's when you feel really one with the universe. So I don't think it has to be the way that I see it. It's just to be open to that there's something else working that's bigger than us. I mean, even the fact that you and I can speak through the computer, right? There are many things happening that we can't see with our five senses. We cannot, but it's making it work so that we can talk in different parts of the world, right?
Right.
So if that's possible, right? If you just look at science and all the things that are possible, then isn't this possible too? And look in those times where you actually feel light filled. But I also think to challenge people, right? I really believe one of my favorite authors is David Foster Wallace. And he talked about this in his commencement speech, where he said, everybody worships. The only choice you get is what you worship, right? So some people worship Allah or God or Jesus or however you want to say it, right? Or they might worship their money. And if they worship their money, they're never going to have enough. If they worship how smart they are, they'll always feel like the dumbest person in the room. If they worship their looks, as they age, they're going to die 1,000 deaths before they're actually put into the ground, right? So if you look at life like that, what are you worshiping? I'm just saying, put your energy towards where there is positivity and there's change and growth for the better. And to do that, you need to be able to see life in a different way.
Oh, I love that. Another thing that I loved when I was reading up on you is how you practice gratitude. You know, what is some of your favorite ways to practice gratitude, like on a daily basis? You know, like,
no, I love that question. First, let's look at what gratitude is, right? It's really, in essence, appreciation. And appreciation, especially, I often help people, couples and relationships, the first thing that's lost in a relationship is appreciation. And once the appreciation is lost, you feel like the love is lost. The love's not actually lost, but you just can't access it because you don't appreciate this person anymore, right? The same thing, you know, I have four kids. Your baby right now, 22 months, like I'm sure it's just the sun shines in their face. Like you could never, love them unconditionally, such appreciation and gratitude. But when they go through the teenage process and they talk back to you or they challenge you, you may not feel like all that. Oh, suddenly, now has the love changed? No. Has the essence of the child changed? No. But if we're not appreciating them in those moments, you're not going to feel the same way you perhaps feel right now in this moment. There was a study I remember reading. There was a violinist playing in the metro station in Washington, D.C. It's like early 2000s. And it was during rush hour and people walked by very busily, you know, as you can imagine, through the metro station. Nobody really pays attention to artists or anything. Few people stopped. The only one that really paid attention was a three-year-old boy. And his mom kind of had to pull him away because they were rushing. But he was really like taken by this violinist. That day, the violinist made about $35. Six people only stood. And he hardly got any applause when he finished. This violinist was Joshua Bell, who was like one of the greatest violinists playing one of the most difficult pieces to play on a violin. And the violin was worth $3.5 million. And by the way, 2 days before this experiment, he played in a sold out room in Boston where the cheapest seat was like $100 a ticket. So what does that tell us, right?
Right.
That if you cannot judge what it is that you're seeing, right? If they knew it was Joshua Bell, if they knew how much his violin cost, if they knew how talented he was and how known he was, they would have stopped and appreciated him. The fact that they didn't have context around it, they just didn't appreciate. Yeah. The lesson is that for all of us, right? If you don't make it a point to make sure you pay attention to the things that you want to pay attention to, and that you awaken gratitude every single day, the most important things in your life will just go past you. You won't even notice them, right?
Wow.
Gratitude and appreciation is something that you need to awaken. You need to awaken and choose every single day. You need to cultivate every day. It's not something that's automatic. And again, it is the first thing that is usually lost and in the most important parts of our life. You know, like I had an injury with my foot 2 years ago and I couldn't walk. And I'm an athlete. I couldn't walk for like a year. And I remember when I finally could walk again, I mean, every single step, I was in such a state of gratitude and my body, my bones, my tendons, my ligaments, all these things, my blood going through my heart, like everything's working as it should. What a miracle. Instead of taking it for granted, I woke up today and I did all the things I wanted to do because, you know, my body should show up for me every single day like it always does. But that's just the wrong way to go about life. And if we can awaken gratitude, we're going to be much more happy and fulfilled every single day.
Wow. And how do you awaken gratitude? Do you write it in a journal? Like I know a lot of people do gratitude journals and they do meditations. And, you know, what is some of, like for someone who maybe is, how do I start? How do I begin with this? Is there some practice that you put forward that makes it a little easier?
I think a gratitude journal is great. I think the key is to be consistent and to do it every single morning and afternoon and evening. So like, even if it's just one thing, like again, when you wake up in the morning and you open your eyes, that's what I do. I thank God, but you can just have gratitude for, you know, that I was able to awake again, open my eyes, that I'm breathing, and then I have the opportunity to have another day.
Right.
And then when I exercise, you know, again, to be so happy that my body's showing up for me in this way. Mm-hmm. And then with my children, you know, to pause and say, wow, I'm so happy that they want connection and that they do love me. You know, it's just in each, all the things that we would take for granted, or to say, you know, a blessing before I eat food, right? To be thankful that I have that. It's in all those ways.
It's funny because I find, you know, I always was someone that wanted to practice gratitude, and I try because my husband's very good at it, and he, you know, has his morning pages and his evening pages and does all sorts of stuff, and it's hard for me. But what I've found is since having a baby, I had a very tough birth and tough postpartum, that I found myself practicing gratitude so much with my child. When I meet other parents whose maybe child did not make it, or their child is very sick and has issues, or even something as simple as like they're allergic to everything. And I'm just like, I'm so grateful and so thankful to whomever's out there, whatever it is, you know, that I have a healthy baby, that I don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to feed my baby? Or how am I going to feed my baby? I can't afford it. You know, I found having a child really brought the awareness around me so much more than I ever thought in my entire life, like how grateful I was, you know.
No, I think that's really powerful. And those examples, and even, you know, the things that I don't feel like doing in a day, right? I'll stop and say, okay, well, how can I reframe this? Because is it something that I believe in, that I want to do, even if I don't feel like it right now, but ultimately is part of my my bigger picture goals? And if yes, then I pause and say, okay, instead of feeling like, oh, I'm just tired today, reframe that and say, wow, I appreciate they have the opportunity to put my energy in this place because I do believe in it, right? So we can use gratitude and appreciation in so many different ways throughout our day. The point is to keep doing it.
Yeah. And reframe. I love that reframe. I absolutely love that. So you've written three books, I believe, right? Three or four?
The fourth one's coming out in the fall, but yeah.
Fourth is coming in the fall. So, you know, how do you have the time and the patience and the energy to sit down and focus and write this? What made it so important for you to share these words in writing?
So again, if I feel like I have lived something and I think that it can help somebody else on their journey, then I feel compelled to say it and to share it. So it comes more from that space. Writing was never about, you know, being a great writer or being noticed or being popular, being accepted. It was really, I have something to say. I believe in what I'm saying and I think that it can help people. So that was always the impetus. And still is. And as far as, and usually I have to be on the other side of the process to get the clarity to write it. And the other part of it is that in terms of time, you know, you're never going to have time to do all the things you want. Like I have a lot of ideas, a lot of things I would love to do. But the key is when you feel inspired by something, when you have an idea, just jot it down, write it down, and then try to take one step into manifesting it like in that moment. Because if you're like, oh, I'm inspired, but my writing day is like in 3 days from now and I'll sit and do it. Forget it. When you feel inspired, when you feel awakened, write it down then. And then you can organize it later. And it's, don't try to make it perfect. Let it be messy. But the point is just allow things to flow through you and out of you.
I love that. And what are the three books about, and what is the fourth one going to be about?
So the first book is Fear is Not an Option. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, if fear is not an option, then you start to ask yourself, well, what is, right? So it's really challenging fear. And I identify three different types of fear in the book and how once you identify them, you can see how you can transform your fear into something else and really to challenge the fears and not to accept it as truth. Because fear is the one thing that steals the greatest thing from us. You know, it's interesting because we go through great lengths to protect the different things in our lives. We protect our houses, right? We have an alarm. We put our money in the bank, our jewelry in the vault. We even like lock our bicycles up, right? Yeah. But when you think about fear, we let it steal from us every single day because we're afraid to do things. We're afraid to say things. We're afraid to try things. So in essence, the biggest thing that fear steals is our potential. And if you look at it like that, it's like, well, what, I'm an idiot, right? Right? So I think that and the book is semi-autobiographical. So the first part, again, is the different types of fear. So there's healthy, there's real, and there's illogical. So healthy fear is as it sounds. It's set up for our survival and our protection. It's there to keep us safe. You know, don't walk too close to the edge of a cliff. You could fall. Don't put your hand too close to an open flame. You could get burnt. But even things like intuition, like how do you know if when you have a negative thought, is that fear or is that intuition? Like how do you decipher between the two? The example I give is that it's in the book. This woman was approached by a police officer one day in Murray, Utah. And he approached her and he said, you know, your car has been broken into. We've apprehended the suspect. We've identified some of your items. Can you come to the station with me to make sure that they're yours? And she got this weird feeling in her stomach. And she said, well, let me see your badge. So he showed him that he had a badge. reluctantly, she went with him. She got in the car. They're driving, and she notices that they're driving in the wrong direction. They're going away from the police station. So she starts to panic, and she has her hand on the door. Meanwhile, the driver is starting to handcuff her with his other hand. So she's pulling, and she jumps out of the moving car. He stops the car. A fight ensues on the side of the road, and she's able to escape. 2 days later, on that same – she's reading the newspaper.
Gosh.
2 days later, she reads on that same day that that happened to her, it happened to somebody else later in the day. And she was murdered. She was raped and then murdered. And she recognizes – and they caught him. She recognized the police officer's face was serial killer Ted Bundy.
Oh, my gosh.
So our – you know, our – that feeling that we get in our stomach, our intuition, that is – that is healthy fear,
right?
Telling you to be, you know, to protect yourself.
Sure.
Then there's real fear. There's fear of illness. There's fear of death, of losing our loved ones. So even with this fear, you can transform into something that is helpful. So if, for instance, you are afraid of disease, then you can take steps to make sure you have a healthier lifestyle, right?
Sure.
That you exercise, that you eat well, that you sweat every day, that you limit, you know, alcohol or sugar intake. There's many things. If you fear losing loved ones, well, then make sure that every single day you spend time with them, loving them, telling them that you appreciate them, kind of what we spoke about before, instead of wanting to change them or complain about them or even ruminate about the day that will come when they're not here. Instead, enjoy them now.
The moments, yeah.
Now, illogical fear is the one that really we experience 99% of the time. That is the fear that really gets us. It's fear of public speaking. It's fear of heights, it's fear of airplanes, it's fear of rejection, of failure. It's all those things that steal our potential. And that's where we're able to completely eradicate fear if we challenge it. So the book goes through all of that. I mean, that's a long, you asked me just very simply, but that's what that book is about.
No, I love that because I have a fear of flying. And then I always am, you know, a doomsday person where I'm thinking of the worst and like what's going to happen, you know, and I constantly find myself living in fear of the unknown at things that I can't control, you know, and that's what I have to say, you know what, I have to relinquish this control. Like it's not going to change anything. You know, it's, if anything, it's going to make my stress levels higher. It's going to make me sick inside and I need to stop, you know? And that's
but also you're missing out on so many things, right?
And the positives of life. Yeah.
To wake up in a different world, a different reality. Because when you fly and you go across the world to somewhere else and see how other people are living, or you see a different sunset or a different view, it makes you look at your reality day to day and say, wow, maybe I want to change some things. Or maybe you feel so inspired that you want to do different things. Like it's so important to not, right? Because that's the, so challenge it. Every time that I would develop a new fear, I would go head in so I wouldn't collect new fears, because that's what happens over life. We collect more and more fears and more and more fears if you don't challenge them, and then you become a very fear-based person instead of being more like we were when we were children, that they're fearless, you know? It's like, learn to walk, learn to ride a bike, learn to, oh yeah, like, okay, and if they get hurt, they get back up again, you know?
I another example of like, when I watch my daughter and I see the things that she does and I'm just like, wow, she truly is like fearless. She has no fear of these. She'll climb things and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. You know? And I'm just like, okay, I have to let her be. Like she's experiencing this. Like I don't want to put my fear onto her. And I have to be very careful of that as well. You know? And she inspires me every day because I just see the things that she does and she accomplishes. And I'm like, wow, like, how are you doing this? You know, but that's so cool. I used to be like that. How can I get back to that? You know,
that's how you do it. Read the book. There's tons of tools.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that. And what is the book that is about to come out in the fall?
So really quickly, the second book is Rethink Love, all
thank
about
you,
relationships.
Mom brain.
It's a 3-part book. The first 8 chapters are how you become the one, which means you learn to love yourself. You learn to appreciate yourself. Removing shame and blame and guilt, all the relationship with self. The second part is going from that me part to we. So it's me to we, and it's how to not lose yourself once you find your significant other, how to grow together, all the different tools there. And the last part is we, and that's how to be a successful couple and that your love grows more and more each year instead of wanes, which is usually how most relationships are. The third book is a children's book. It's called The Gift of Being Different that I co-authored with my youngest daughter, Abigail. And it's about how the thing that you're most insecure about is really your superpower. Yes. And everybody has one. Abigail's is dyslexia. And how she can see the world differently and she learns differently, which is really a superpower and a gift because she'll be able to solve problems in ways that nobody else can. Yes. Very powerful story that we went around the
world.
How
old was
schools.
She when she wrote co-wrote it with you?
8. She's 10 now. Yeah.
How sweet.
And now the next book is another children's book. It's called The Tale of the Other Glove. So Abigail is the narrator again, and it's her adventure in New York City on a subway station. So each book, it's a series on being series, focuses on a social issue or an economic issue or personal issue and what the spiritual remedy for it is. So with the first book, right, it's about how to reframe how we feel about ourselves and to see ourselves through a different lens, and that is shifting of consciousness, basically, is the powerful way to approach our limitations. The second book, so it's about an unhoused person that Abigail sees on the streets, and then she has an incident in the subway station where her babysitter drops a glove and an unhoused man takes it, and the babysitter doesn't give it the other glove to him. And it's a whole question of what is one glove good to for anybody, right? Sure. The homeless man is happy because he didn't have any gloves and now he has one. The babysitter is not going to wear one glove only, so she's going to have to throw that out and buy another glove. So why not just give it to him? And so this whole conversation ensues among the three of us. And the power of that book is the power of empathy and to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. So that comes out in the fall. And then I'm working on another book that's nonfiction.
Amazing.
That's in the process. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I just have to have my daughter help me out with the books because I feel like then I'd actually get things accomplished and done because I've been thinking about a kid's book for so long. And that's so wonderful. I love that you're doing that with your child. I think that's so amazing. I think we don't appreciate the imaginations and the smarts behind our child. Our kids are so brilliant and they have so many unique ideas and so many unique perspectives. And if we could just look through the eyes of our child just for a little bit, I'm telling you, like you said, fear all of it. It's an absolute game changer. It's an absolute game changer.
Well, my kids, I've spoken about this and I speak about it, that they've all inspired me in so many different ways.
Right.
Each child has touched me in something different about myself. How to be different. They inspire me in each of their own strengths and I pay attention to them. And I decide like, I want to be more like David. I want to be more like Mira. Like they've all taught me and, yeah. And so I think it's foolish when parents go into parenting thinking that they're the only teachers there. We have just as much to learn from our children as we
absolutely.
Do teach them.
Absolutely. A kind of a selfish question for myself because I only have one child and I can't imagine having more. I would feel like so overwhelmed. How do you find balance as a mom giving the same, I wouldn't even say the same energy, but the amount of time to four different individuals? Like a lot of people write me and go, I don't want to have another kid because I'm scared I won't be able to give the same amount of love and attention. How do you do it with four?
I had that same fear going from one to two. My first, I was like, oh my God, could I ever love another human as much as I love him? But then you realize if you go through with it that we have so much love to give, endless amount of love. And each child is going to be varied and different as they are meant to be. And that you will, again, it depends how you were raised, but if you're a healthy person, you will love all of your children. You might have a different relationship with each of them. They might, you might even be more compatible with each of them differently. That's okay. That's not a problem. But as long as you love them and you encourage them to be the best that they can be. I mean, for me, having kids, it was never about, having kids so that I could make them into what I wanted or mold them into something or that I had expectations for them. For me, it was more like I have so much love to give And I want to be able to help these souls with their process in life and their journey. And I find that to be a great merit to be able to have any assistance in that. I don't see them as mine, right? Mm-hmm. I can say this to you and to all your listeners. I've never, ever, in all of my years of counseling people, ever heard anybody regret having had another child. They always regret not having had more. You know, wow. And it seems like right now, like, oh, it's so great. And I'm so enjoying this age. And I don't want anything to change, but it's going to change anyway. They are going to get older. They will need you less. And you might find yourself craving, wanting to give to another child. And then it might, you know, who knows? But I wouldn't wait is what I'm saying. I mean,
right.
Not too long anyway.
Yeah, right. Oh, I absolutely love that. And thank you for that. Was my selfish question that I wanted to ask. And I always find myself drawn to people who have more than one child and being like, how do you do it? Like, how do you?
Messy.
What was the first step?
It's,
you know,
messy. And it's meant
totally
to be.
Totally messy.
And
but
it's okay.
And fun.
It's fun.
And like a good time, you
and
know?
But I they are for each
the
other
first
too.
Step.
Yeah. It's not all on you. You know, they'll have each other. If you're in a relationship, they'll have your partner. Like, it's really a fear. It's, and for the most part, it's an illogical fear.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. And then you have this podcast, which is amazing. And it's called, I want to make sure I say that correctly. Cause I'm like, I had it written down because I was like, oh my God, I was saying something totally different. Spiritually Hungry. No, it's not Spiritually Hungry.
It is. It is Spiritually
it
Hungry.
It is. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was like, okay, I couldn't find it right now. So you have Spiritually Hungry podcast. How long have you been doing that for? And what is that like?
It's been like 3 years now.
Wow.
It was like a COVID birth. My husband and I have this podcast together. It's great fun. I think it's super informative. We talk about everything under the sun, every topic you can imagine. We bring in science, our personal lives, spirituality, and it's a combination of all of that. And the other feedback we got, which was not our intention when we started it, was that it's been really great for people to see, listen, watch a healthy couple have exchanges, because you can tell that we have, you know, thank God we have a great relationship and we laugh and we banter and we challenge each other. And a lot of people have not heard healthy relationships, not in their home. They haven't had a model for that. They haven't just seen it. So it's really been inspiring for people in that way also, even though it's not a relationship podcast.
Is your husband in the field of kind of a viewer of helping others?
Yes, we do the same thing. We met at the Kabbalah Center. His parents actually founded
amazing.
It.
Wow.
So, and it's interesting too, because, and I always say this to people, you know, especially people who want to find their soulmate and they want to find the one. I always say, if you want to find the one, be the one. And what does that mean? You need to develop yourself to, like, if you, whoever it is that you want, you have that whole list. And let's assume that not just, you know, what you see with your five senses is on the list, like how they look or, you know, what they do or how much money they have. But it's also, you know, what are their goals? What are their beliefs? Are they kind? Are they empathetic? You know, what that you have the same values, right? So I didn't know what mine were when I was really looking for somebody. And in those really hard years that I told you about, I really discovered that. And I became that version of myself, because when I was anorexic, I was so lonely. I really wanted to be loved, but I knew I had to learn to love myself first. And all those things that I wanted to receive, I had to give to myself first. And so I had seen him 5 years earlier at the beginning of my eating disorder. I was not interested at all. We didn't recognize each other at all in that way. We were kind of like curious just about each other as people, but not at all. Like, I never thought that that's who I'd end up with. And then five years after, like, working through all of this, I saw him again. We were working on a project and our hands touched and it was like magic. We were married 9 months later. So often I say to people, like, the person can be right in front of you, but you won't recognize them if you're not, because then you'll pick somebody else. It just depends on where you're at in your life and what you want to do and what kind of life partner you want to have. You have to become that first.
It's so funny because my husband and I met a year, maybe a little more than a year before we actually started dating. And he had approached me and, like, you know, at a Halloween party, and we kept meeting in all these different instances, and I just was not interested, and it hadn't nothing to do with him. I just was going through this moment of myself, kind of like you were, of growth and figuring out who I was and healing myself. And I wasn't ready. And then one day I was just like, oh my God, where have you been? You know? And he was there the whole time. So it's so funny how that happens. So you really do have to make sure that you're the one. So I love that advice. Wow. Well, Monica, I'm going to ask you my final question that I ask everyone on the show. What is your emotional support?
What is my emotional support? My connection to the creator. I mean, it's my certainty and it's my sense of knowing why I'm here and that I'm doing everything I can that I think I'm meant to. You know, really like that commitment to living that life.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. Well, Monica, how can everyone find you and get the new book that's coming out soon and all that?
My blog is rethinklife.today. So all my information is there. And my social media handles is Monica R. Berg 74. So you
great.
Can find
and
me
I
there.
Will have everything down below too. So people can just click
and
it
check
right
out
away.
Spiritually Hungry. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. So nice talking to you.